welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we're going to start to look ahead to the Giants' upcoming matchup on Sunday at MetLife Stadium against the Chicago Bears out of the NFC North. We'll also get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can't get to the phone, well, you could chime in using hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Before we get to the Chicago Bears, before we get to the phone calls, Paul and I will go over the injury report. Now, the Giants are going to be practicing later today, so we don't have any updates as far as who's going to be out there today. But we have some info based on what Ben McAdoo discussed during his conference call late yesterday when he addressed the media. And there's a number of players to at least throw out there, Paul. Number one, he's optimistic from what he said that Victor Cruz should be out there Thursday once they really take on their hardcore practice getting set for the Bears.
Yeah, first off, it's because of the Monday night game that today's only going to be a light jog through later on in the afternoon. In fact, folks, programming note, MSG's Giants Press Conference Live, which I usually host with David Deal, will not be seen at 2 o'clock today. Rather, it will be on at 6 p.m. tonight. Coach McAdoo is not going to meet with us until a dinner time, long after the hours expire. So we're going to have practice later, a jog through, followed by Coach McAdoo. So once again, tonight, MSG, 6 o'clock for Giants Press Conference Live. So once we got that out of the way, I wanted to make that clear for you. Victor Cruz, then, as you mentioned, the sprained ankle. The thought is that when they actually have a real practice on Thursday, that he is going to go. That's the thinking right now. Barring a setback, look, I thought there was a real chance he was going to play this past weekend, and I know he did too, but they wanted to be cautious. Obviously, they didn't think that it was worth pushing him because of all the leg issues he's had over the last 2 years. What if he favors that ankle and now all of a sudden stresses out one of those other things that has recovered? Then they lose him for maybe the season.
Well, and then on top of that, I would also make the argument, Paul, I think it's easier to hold him back knowing Roger Lewis, Tavarius King, the fact
Shepherd.
That they want to expand these roles, Shepherd too. Ben McAdoo's talked about we're going to take full advantage of the 46 that we dress every game. Well, better to give them opportunities now in case you need them a little bit later
a
on.
A safe and conservative call, and in retrospect, a good call.
It didn't come back to bite them. I know Roger Lewis had some drops, but King made a few key plays. He drew a pass interference, made a catch in the red zone to help set up the Sterling Shepard touchdown. So they certainly got contributions on the back end. Other notable injuries, Brett Jones suffered a strained calf. He's still going to undergo further testing. Soreness is what he's been dealing with, at least based on what Coach McAdoo said. And then Dwayne Harris dealing with the toe injury. He's another guy whose status is very much up in the air.
There is optimism regarding Brett Jones. I don't know, again, until Thursday's practice, how much optimism you can weigh in terms of his playing status. But there is optimism about Brett Jones. As far as Dwayne Harris, I just don't know what to think because I've known guys who have had turf toe, dislocated toe, ligaments in the toe, all kinds of different toe injuries. There's a wide spectrum. When you say toe injury, there's a wide spectrum. And
you need a doctor to understand it.
There are some toe injuries that keep guys out for a season. And there are others that, okay, bruised, sprained, they're back in a couple of weeks. We have no idea. So I'm going to totally withhold any thoughts about Dwayne Harris until I see what happens later on in the week. But I'm hopeful about Brett Jones because, from what happened after the game the other day and talking to guys out of the locker room, there was some optimism. Brett was not, like, around on crutches and, like, you know, really in bad shape. So that's pretty good.
He was asked, Ben McAdoo, do any of them seem to be long-term issues? He didn't think that any of them would be long-term issues, but I want to read his exact answer, and this is what you just alluded to. The challenge is it's a short week, McAdoo said. He goes on to say, we're not going to do much tomorrow, meaning today. Thursday's practice will be big for a lot of these guys. Because, like you said, it's a jog-through, so you can't really tell much of anything
right
today. And if anything, you're going to hold back the guys that are dealing with the bumps and bruises until perhaps seeing to get them out there on Thursday.
Don't forget DRC's back stiffened up a bit. And, they apparently had decided the day before the game, on Sunday, this was revealed by Coach, that they had decided to reduce his workload as to not stress him out, not put any extra pressure on him. But wow, what a fortunate circumstance that turned out to be because it meant that Eli Apple played every snap on Sunday, coming off the bad game against the Eagles, And one of the big questions I had going into this past weekend was, how would Eli Apple, the Giants' first-round pick, bounce back from the worst game he's had this season? And boy, did he bounce back. Missed one tackle, was in on three solid tackles, think he might have given up two pass completions of minimal yardage. Coach said he played well. And that's what you want to see from a corner.
And they also utilized Cody Sensabaugh, too.
They did.
As well as Trevin Wade. So they at least had that mindset coming in, which was very interesting that Ben McAdoo had mentioned, because I know we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and callers were wondering, well, why didn't DRC get a lot of snaps? And we were waiting to see if Ben McAdoo could provide some more insight. And then we found out, back stiffened up, but they were dealing with that a day before, so they had a game plan in place as opposed to it was all of a sudden a last-minute thing that happened right before the contest, Paul.
So I don't know going forward how much this will or will not be a problem for DRC. I would suspect that we're going to find out at practice on Thursday how much he works and whether or not that continues to be an issue. But again, the positive here, the silver lining in his injury, is that Eli Apple bounced back. And look, Bill Parcells always told us, I learned this way back in the 80s in my infancy as a reporter. Bill Parcells said, you haven't proven anything as an NFL player until you have overcome adversity and bounced back. He used to say, a quarterback isn't for real in the NFL until he has a four-pick game or until he goes through a three-, four-, or five-game losing streak, which is one of the reasons I caution people about Dak Prescott. You know, Wentz has now gone through some of those struggles where he lost three out of four and where things weren't going real well for him. And that's why I tell people about Wentz, okay, now we're going to find out a little bit more about what's going on because his stuff's on tape. Prescott's stuff is on tape second half of the season. Now, can they make the proper adjustments? What happens if they start reaching, I don't want to say the heights of their rookie status, but when they start running into some rough waters? How will they navigate them as rookies? You know, that's going to be something that those teams need to be mindful of.
A little bit easier to game plan when you have more substance on film so you can get a better idea of the tendencies of the quarterback. I remember when we were talking about the Cowboys-Giants game back in week one, Paul, there were a few scouts who had mentioned in passing, if I'm a team, I'd rather see Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz in week 8 or 9 as opposed to week 1, 2, or 3 because we'll have more film on him, which is understandable based on how those performances have played out. But it is interesting, getting back to your main point about DRC's back stiffness opens the door for Eli Apple to get tested with respect to adversity and flourishes under those circumstances. The one thing I will say, and this doesn't mean that history is going to repeat itself, but DRC, Paul, does have a history of dealing with some injuries here or there. Last season, remember, there were games where he was constantly in and out of the lineup, which is not to indicate that that's going to happen moving forward with this back, but I think the silver lining, as you worded it, Paul, is the more experience is the same thing when Victor Cruz is out of the lineup. The more experience that you give to Eli Apple, Cody Sensabaugh, Trevin Wade, the better you're prepared if it does flare up again, as opposed to throwing these guys and having it baptism by fire. Now, I understand Wade and Sensabaugh are veterans, but, you know, they have also limited time, specifically Sensabaugh, within the Giants scheme.
That is true. That is true. I would add one other thing about all of this, and that is, when we were going through training camp and we kept talking about, well, where's Apple going to play and is DRC actually going to move into the slot or not? And the Giants were like, okay, we're going to try everybody everywhere. That's part of the reason why, because of what's happening now, okay? Because guess what? If the Giants do need to put Apple in the slot, he works some of that in training camp. If not, that's okay too, because you know what? He's worked outside most of his career, especially at Ohio State. That's okay too. They can mix and match and put these guys wherever they have to. Janoris Jenkins even did some slot work a little bit in training camp. It's not like he can't do it.
They were preparing them for these circumstances.
Exactly.
They were anticipating that.
They foreshadowed this.
Yeah, and that's when you have to do it. You don't wait till week 7 to start training a guy to move it to the slot. You do it in training camp.
And that's why when we talked to Spags during the summer and people kept trying to pin him down, where is he going to play? You know, is Apple going to play slot? You know, is DRC, we've seen him in the slot some. Is he going to go there? And Spags kept saying, look, we want to make sure they know all the spots. And the writers kept trying to press them as to, oh, where are you going to cement these guys?
The roles for these guys.
And they were just experimenting. Oh, but Jenkins took snaps in the slot today. You know, well, what's that all about? Oh, like it's some big secret. No, it's no big secret. It was Spags preparing for every scenario. And he tried to tell people that, and the writers didn't want to believe him.
Well, the game of speculation. Good luck trying to tell the New York media not to speculate. 201-939 4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. A little bit later on, we'll get into the Chicago Bears as we start to preview some of their strengths, some of their weaknesses. It's a Bears team that's 2-7, 0-5 on the road. Number of issues, clearly, that have been brought to the forefront as a result of watching the Chicago Bears. They just recently got Jay Cutler back from injury, but he's coming off a game in which he was very turnover-prone, and their running back perhaps is dealing with an ankle or an Achilles injury. We'll get into more on that front a little bit later on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. But we want to give you an opportunity to weigh in the meantime at 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com as we are starting to look ahead to the Chicago game. And let's get the festivities started. We've got Alan on the line in the Bronx. Alan, what's happening?
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Hi.
Hello, Alan. How's things with you?
Good. I know we've spent the whole season critiquing and picking at this defense, and now it seems like the defense has been doing their job. My biggest concern is 20.2 points a game in the bottom half of the league. We're not scoring the way we should be, and you know, these next two games against Cleveland and Chicago, this is when you got to put up 30 games, because I'm worried when you play Dallas and Detroit at the end of the season when we got the playoffs on the line, we got to win a shootout. And you know, I'm 22, 23 points. It's just not going to do it. You know, Eli's still with the turnovers late in the game, and it's just, I'm just wondering, when is this offense going to get clicking? We thought this offense was going to be top five like it was last year in points scored, and they're still struggling to put up 20, 25 points a game. I'm very concerned about that.
Okay,
the defense I feel good about now.
Let me just give you a second here to ponder this. Shane Vereen's a big part of why the Giants were successful last year offensively, and he's been out of the lineup for most of the season. He will be back for December in all likelihood, okay? That in itself should make you feel better. I'm going to tell you, he's probably worth 3 points
a
game.
Talk you off the ledge.
No, he's probably worth 3 points a game right there because of his third down capabilities. Not only does he catch the ball, but he also runs the ball pretty darn well. We saw that last year. So figure, just battling with field position and his ability to keep drives alive, I'm telling you, this offense very, very much misses Shane Vereen, more than anybody is willing to admit, and you will be very happy when he's back in there. Please don't forget that.
What about the guys that we have right now, though? It's great to get him back, and we have him back, but I need a little bit better on Dwayne Harris on the punt returns. Can you give me a big punt return one time this season? I need something. Get me excited about the guys that we have right now, not about guys that are coming back.
Well, to be fair, Dwayne Harris has now got this toe injury, which we don't have any information on. I don't know. It's entirely possible that the toe injury could be long term. I don't want it to be, but it could, which means Bobby Rainey may be your new return guy moving forward. He's got experience. He's got a decent NFL resume as a return guy, although I think it's fair to say he's not nearly as explosive as Dwayne Harris is.
Would it be a disappointment with these two games coming up that this team doesn't put up 30 points?
I don't think it'd be a disappointment based on the points. I think it'd be a disappointment if they wind up losing these games. I think that's a better way to label it. But, I mean, if you win with 25 points or you win by 30, what's the difference?
Let me ask you this.
You don't get brownie points, Alan.
I'm just worrying about, when you're playing Dallas and,
don't worry about that.
Alan, every game in the NFL is different. Just because you put up 30 points against the Cleveland Browns, let's say, hypothetically, doesn't mean that you're in a better position to put up 35
against
the Cowboys.
You should put your foot on a very less
throat. Let me ask you this. If the Giants win this game 24-10, okay, after winning four barn burners in a row, okay, and wind up with a five-game winning streak by Sunday night, are you going to sit there in your chair and say, "Oh, they didn't score 30 points"?
I have them. I have them going 8-3. I have them going 8-3 into this final stretch of the season. But I know to beat Dallas, to beat Detroit, to beat these teams, you're going to need points.
Here's the thing, though. If the Giants have a two-score lead, they're just going to try to milk the clock, and why shouldn't they? Is it really important for them to score 30 points against these two teams if they've got a score and a half or a two-score lead in the fourth quarter? What does it matter? I hear what you're saying.
I know.
You're worrying too much.
Listen, we're 6-3. You got to find something to nip.
I know,
right?
Man. That's the thing. That's the thing. You're worrying too much. Would you rather have last year's worries? I don't think so.
No. Thank you, gentlemen.
You got it, Alan. Appreciate the phone call. And what Alan's piggybacking off of is actually, if you recall, we got a similar call yesterday right at the end of the show, Paul, where the concern was the same thing. The Giants are not scoring as much. But we brought up, at least I had highlighted the fact that keep in mind the defense, though, is holding the opposition to less points than where it was last season.
Right.
About a touchdown less. So you take that into consideration, it's taking a little bit more stress off of the offense. Now, is there room for improvement from an offensive standpoint? Absolutely. But I don't know if it's so much the return of personnel, Paul, as it is what's encouraging to me is the Giants are moving the football. They've been doing that pretty much consistently every single game. The problem has been that the red zone efficiency is not where it should be, meaning punching it in. Now, they're coming off a game where they were very efficient in the red zone. They took advantage of their opportunities against the Bengals, but we're not seeing that game to game.
One would think if they stop these turnovers, and it's now up to, 18 games in a row, if they will stop these turnovers, that means more snaps, more time of possession, probably more yards, and probably more points. I mean, that's just...
So that was another thing that we hit on yesterday, yeah.
Look, that does have a correlation to the amount of points you're going to score. Here's what I'm telling you, okay? Giants this year, yards per play, they're 16th in the league, which is smack in the middle. Okay? Smack in the middle. I mean... Would you have thought, and did we talk about all offseason, the Giants will be, you know, for sure a top 10 offense again? Yeah, we did. We did. I don't think anybody counted on, you know, Eli having a little bit of a rough patch because he was a little bit inconsistent there and had a little bit of a problem. I don't think any of us counted on the fact that the running game as a whole would actually step backwards, which it really kind of has.
You thought there would be some improvement at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't think that Shane Vereen was going to miss most of the games. So... I think all of us thought that the tight ends would show up a little bit more than they have in the first half of the season with only one touchdown catch between the three of them until Adams went into the end zone the other day. That's only the second touchdown catch for a Giants tight end this year. You know, we all thought that there would be more production out of the tight ends as a whole, too. So there are, four areas I just mentioned where there's been lesser production than what we anticipated.
Well, and a number of the areas that you hit on impact the red zone efficiency. If you
sure.
run the football and you get good production out of the tight ends, you're probably going to improve your chances to get into the end zone. So that's why I'm saying I think a lot of those things are interconnected with respect to why the Giants are not getting as many points as many people expect. It's not so much that they're not moving the football. It's just that the execution around that red zone area is
and
not
the shame of it is Eli is one of the best play-action quarterbacks in the NFL. We've known that for years. That's one of his strengths. Well, you can't really do a ton of that if you're not running the ball well. And a lot of times your play-action pass involves your medium-range throws to your tight ends. Well, your tight ends aren't really producing, and your running backs aren't really producing at the level that you want them to.
In terms of consistency.
So where's your play-action pass gone?
Fair point. Plus, remember, they also had the case of the dropsies, too, the last game, too. And that stole drives and impacts your
coach said four,
well.
By the way. Did you see that? He said four on Sunday.
You
I had
five. It's okay. Don't worry.
He was only going to give maybe one to Rashad Jennings instead of two. I was a little tough on him, but I kind of am tough.
Well, because you haven't had your film session with Coach McAdoo. You know, it's a short turnaround week. He hasn't had the usual time to go to you to make sure, is it five versus four?
Well, he has to cross-check these
things.
Of
course. That's what I'm saying. But it's understandable. It's a short week. He's a little pressed for time under the circumstances, so he hasn't gotten around to that. For those of you watching Big Blue Kickoff Live on Twitter, we thank you very much, and we guide you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito with you here for Wednesday's edition of BBK. Also glad you could spend part of your day with us. We're looking ahead to the Bears, also recapping a little bit with respect to the Bengals, and looking at some of the Giants' statistical trends and so forth, areas that they look to improve upon as they get set for Sunday's game. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets. Mike right now is on the phone. He's in Virginia. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing today, fellas? How you doing?
Hi,
Mike. How's things with you?
Everything's well. I'd like to start off on a good note. You know, we have changed a lot of the issues that we had last year as far as defense. Being able to go into the fourth quarter, have a lead, and hold it. That's played major dividends for us, and I'm glad about that. That's one of the main issues that we had last year on why we had so many losses. But with the positive. The negative with me is, even though we have a good record, we're just playing sloppy football. And at the end of the day, sloppy football is what loses games. And I just wish we could somehow find a way to clean up these mistakes. The offensive play calling, I mean, it seems like we're doing a lot of slants, quick outs, maybe a couple dig routes across the middle and inside traps, and that is it. And we're going to run against a defense that's going to sit on those routes and going to cause a lot of problems for us. So I just want to get a little bit more creative with the offense. Hopefully, you know, Pugh can come back, get healthy for us.
Well, Mike, I mean, I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to jump in here, and then I'll let you continue. I mean, in terms of creativity, the Giants are coming off a game where, you know, they put in just that new route with Odell Beckham when he circled around Pac-Man Jones and then some and got the touchdown. I mean, that was a little bit new of a flavor in terms of what they brought to the offense. And then, you know, another great play call was the adjustment for Sterling Shepard to run a crossing route on Vontaze Burfict for what ultimately was the go-ahead touchdown. So, I mean, I don't know necessarily if they're coming off a game where you can put the play calling under the microscope. I think for the most part, all of those things tended to work out and the execution was there.
Now, I want to be very careful.
I'm not talking about just this game. I'm saying in general. That's the second time that Beckham has ran that route. He ran it the first time against Baltimore, and it worked.
Well, this was on a similar route, correct.
Let me be very, very careful here when you start talking about the Giants being sloppy. Now, are they dropping a few too many passes? Yes. Are they still turning the ball over? Yes. However, you could also look at some of their turnovers the last couple of weeks and say that they're circumstantial. It's not a matter of them being sloppy. Here's the one that number, though, that I want to give you. Did you know the Giants are tied for the second fewest amount of penalties in the NFL? When you talk about a sloppy team, you're usually talking about a lot of penalties. They only have 49 flags called against them.
Big turnaround, because early in the season they were up there.
Okay, right now, tied for second fewest penalties in the league, and over the four-game winning streak, they have had 17 total flags called against them, which is just over four a game. You know, that's not sloppy. So it kind of, when you say sloppy, that encompasses a bunch of things. And I think if you really look at it more carefully, what you would say is, yeah, they're not as sharp as they should be. There's clearly room for improvement. I'll go there 100% with you. I don't think this Giants team is anywhere near as good as they could be yet, but it's only November, and you want to be as good as you can be in December and January. So I'm with you there. But to say that they're sloppy, I think they were a month ago. I don't think they're quite that sloppy anymore.
Well, and just as a means of comparison, they had 25 penalties in the three-game losing streak.
Yeah.
So 25 penalties in the three-game losing streak and now 17 penalties during the four-game winning streak. Big disparity there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I appreciate you fellas taking my call.
Sure thing.
Appreciate the phone call, Mike.
Call
Thanks
again.
So much for weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Brandon in New York. Brandon, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. How we doing? I just have a couple comments and then two easy questions. First, I want to give it up for our coach. After the bye week, he was, you know, he was vanilla before. Now he's got Eli under center 50% of the time, it looks like, so it's a good balance there. He doesn't really have to worry about the defense with Spags there. I do think that he needs to, you know, with this new kicker now, doesn't have as big of a leg. He's got to make sure that, you know, he's with Quinn a little bit on that end for special teams. As far as with Cruz coming back now, they should really sit down with Lewis, King, see what they're really comfortable with their route running, because they can't run all the routes like Cruz and Shepard and Beckham can. You know, Lewis is more of like a post guy.
All right, looks like we may have lost Brandon there. Appreciate the phone call, Brandon. But his point about
bad sell
Roger Lewis and Tavares King, I mean, I'm not so sure that they're unable to run some of the routes that Victor Cruz. I mean, if you were to at least put them under the microscope, I mean, Lewis had a drop. You know, obviously that came back to bite him a bit. And then King, to me, I thought, you know, made some of the catches in the short immediate routes that helped move the chains yesterday.
I think he's just talking about the style of player that they are and what you would think of. Tavares King, you would think of more of a straight burner kind of guy. Lewis, more of a physical kind of guy, you know, who may fight you for a ball.
A little bit more athletic.
I think, you know, when you talk about the Cruises and the Beckhams and the Shepherds, you're talking more precise route runners. who are going to do a little bit more in terms of their right route running ability to get free and gain separation. I think that's probably what he was getting at. I did want to mention at the beginning of his call, his first point was what? Because I just lost
his
second.
His first point was about Eli Manning being under center. He mentioned that.
Here's what I want to say about that. I thought that the Giants did a much better job of mixing up their player deployment strategies in the last couple of weeks. It seems to me that they're spreading the snaps around a little bit. They're using guys in different spots. We saw Beckham in the last 2 weeks much more in the slot than we had the entire first half of the season. So that's a change. We've seen now they Marshall Newhouse has played some jumbo tight end. We saw Adam Gettys even have to come in and play some guard because they didn't want to get Newhouse out of that jumbo tight end package. They liked it. They said, okay, if you're going to go in, we're going to keep using that. Gettys, get your butt off the bench. You're going to play guard. So they didn't scrap that just because Newhouse had to go into the lineup. They said, okay, Gettys, you go play
next
guard.
Man up,
we're keeping Newhouse outside there. And Larry Donnell has lost all his snaps the last couple of weeks because Adams and Ty have done some productive things as tight ends. So to me, I'm saying to you, I see some changes and some different mixtures in the snaps and the player deployment, especially on offense, which has certainly added some spice to this offense, if nothing else. And the other thing I want to mention to you, we mentioned about the kickoffs. Dwayne Harris is an outstanding coverage guy in the kicking game. And I got to warn you, if he's not available, that could hurt the Giants' ability to cover kicks. Now, Zach Diassi gets down there very, very well, especially on punts. But on kickoffs, who's number 17 is usually in that mix. And that would be a tough loss for the Giants.
Well, going back to his days with the Cowboys, he was known for being on all four coverage units. And also keep in mind, I mean, the Giants have been prone for giving up some big returns each of the last two games with
yes.
Darren Sproles as well as Alex Erickson. That set up the Bengals' go-ahead touchdown right out of the second half. So, you know, those are some things that they're going to have to, you know, take a look at on film for somebody to step up if Harris can't play. I thought these personnel changes that you just laid out, Paul, I mean, they've been noticeable since the opposite end of the bye in the Eagles game. I mean, we saw a fluctuation in terms of the snaps, and we saw some new personnel. The other thing that I'll point out, you know, now the backfield seems to be a two-man show with Rashad Jennings and Paul Perkins, whereas in previous games before the bye, we had seen Bobby Rainey play a role.
Darkwa,
and those guys are not getting any snaps in the backfield. Now it's pretty much Perkins is the complement to Jennings, so that has been a noticeable change as well. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. We got Bill in Phoenix. Bill, what's happening?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Bill. How's things with you?
Good. Hey, I wanted to talk about one play I thought was one of the plays of the game I haven't heard yet, but it was that play Trevin Wade made on that receiver where he hit him and caused the receiver to sort of come down on his head where the receiver dropped the ball in the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was
Trevin Wade made the play. He had the hit that caused the receiver when he hit the ground to lose the ball and it touched the ground, and so it was incomplete.
Tyler
it
Boyd.
Was correctly
yeah.
ruled.
That's who it was.
Yeah, it was the rookie from Pitt.
Yeah.
It was correctly
so I
ruled.
That
it was
a
good
great play.
Play,
and I didn't hear anybody talk anything about it.
No, it was absolutely a terrific play.
Bengals score a touchdown on that. I mean, who knows how the game plays out? So, of course, it was a critical play.
Right. And in a lot of things I saw where it seemed like the Giants were getting hammered on first and second down, but they just seemed to make clutch third down after clutch third down when you didn't think it looked like they were going to make it, and then Beckham comes with one, and the other wide receiver comes up with a couple, and it was that type of game where it unfolded, and I'm really proud the way they played. They didn't give up, and they didn't quit, even where things looked like they were going against them a little bit at the end of the half there, where that defensive tackle was taken over, but they sort of held it together and regrouped and came out with the victory. So,
well, I would even point out, Bill, third down defense was also a critical difference maker. I mean, the Bengals were only 2 for 11 on third down in that game, and they seemed to do a lot of work sometimes on first and second down, and then all of a sudden, Giants made key defensive stops on third down. So I would say just as much as you pointed out the third down efficiency on offense, well, you know, on defense it was big too.
Okay. Well, that's all I got.
You got it, Bill.
Enjoy the show.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You got it. Lance Metal, Paul DeTino with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's hear from Marlon in Atlanta. Marlon, what's happening?
Marlon, hey, guys, how you doing? I'm out here in Atlanta Falcon. Yes, I'm here. You guys hear me?
I hear you loud.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
hello.
Absolutely. So what's happening, Marlon?
Yes. Yes, I'm out here in Falcon Land just trying to survive. I'm so proud of my Giants. Been a diehard fan since Mark Bavaro and Phil Sims. I'm just proud of this team. I had two questions for you guys.
Yeah.
The first question, I just wanted to talk about Coach McAdoo. I think he's doing an amazing job. It was a lot of questions about will he be a great leader? Will he be able to make, you know, certain decisions that a coordinator making a transition to a head coach would make? I just think he's doing an amazing job. I want to know what you guys think about, you know, how he's done these first nine games. A little bit more than X's and O's, just how he's been a leader and how he's been handling the position of head coach.
I'm going to give you two characteristics that I really like about what he has done that have shown me during the course of the season that he's got a chance to succeed. One is he really keeps on an even keel. He is a flatline guy all the way. He's almost robotic in his demeanor. And, you know, to some people, that may not be very interesting or very exciting, but it's working. You know, to keep everything on a flat line is obviously a philosophy he feels as a coach he needs to use so that his players don't get too high or too low. And so far, that seems to be working out pretty well. The other thing I would say in season we have found out is that when they self-scouted during the bye week, it's quite clear that they did really self-scout and make some tweaks. Because there are times when teams will go through the self-scout and you won't notice them very much. Or maybe they say, nah, we're just going to stick to the program and perhaps just do things better. Well, Coach McAdoo didn't do that. He clearly decided as the head coach, and we've already outlined a bunch of small tweaks that have been absolutely noticeable. And so that, to me, has been another positive in season that I have found out about him. I would give you one positive that I found out about him before the season started, so it's not a surprise. He has a tremendous, and I say tremendous, amount of respect for tradition and for the pride of the Giants and their organization and their past and their history and their players and their championships. And he never, ever wavers from that and makes sure that his players in this locker room today understand that you're putting on the NY. There's a standard here. There are great players. Mm-hmm. There are legends who have put that NY on, and you need to do them right. And I found that out after he was named head coach back in the spring, that he had such a tremendous appreciation for that, and it was going to be part of what he would use in his philosophical approach to these players. And so that's not a surprise, but I think it's a good thing.
It's a continuation of essentially what Coughlin preached.
Correct.
Plus, remember, Spags, I think it was right before last season, he showed the defense film of Lawrence Taylor and all the great Giants pass rushers to understand what they need to continue, those types of traditions. That's been a big theme, I think, that's been embedded within this franchise.
Yeah, and I like that you said that he comes off as kind of robotic, because at first I'm like, can this guy really lead us? But now, as I watch the season go on and I watch interviews, he really has these players' belief. They believe in him. They believe in the system. And over the bye week, you know, it's a lot of guys that had decreased time, some guys that had increased playing time. And you don't hear a word about, you know, maybe I should be getting more time.
No, you don't.
You don't hear nothing.
Not a word.
And that's one thing of a good leader, and that means they believe in him. I have one more question. I want to talk about Landon Collins. This guy has improved astronomically between the first and second year. I want you guys to harp a little bit on why do you think he's improved so much? And moving forward, do you think he could be one of the greatest Giant players of all time on the defensive end of the ball?
Well, if he continues this rate, I mean, he'll certainly put himself in position. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Appreciate the phone call, Marlon. To me, and I've said this all the time, and I'll let you, you know, add more to it, Paul, the biggest part of his drastic improvement was the fact that he started and played all 16 games last season. And while the results were not great, the defensive results overall were not great, the reps, knowing the system, understanding where he needs to be, that to me is a big part of why he's so far ahead this season. The second factor is he's back to strong safety, which is his comfort zone this year, as opposed to where he was asked to play last year because of, obviously, the limited options at that position.
I'm going to add one other thing to this, and it's not necessarily about Collins himself. It's just about a general philosophy. Coach Parcells used to tell us all the time, winning breeds winning and losing breeds losing. Well, what happens is with a young player who is just coming into the NFL and trying to learn what it takes to be a pro and what you have to do to win in this league, if he comes into a unit, such as the Giants defense was last year, which was significantly undermanned, it's hard for him to really learn everything correctly when the defense around him is breaking down and not really doing everything correctly, because he is now part of a problem defense as opposed to being part of something that is good, that is productive. And now he has to learn and mesh his way into the higher level of play that the veterans around him are showing him. So it's almost like if you have an apple cart, and you got a bunch of bruised apples in the apple cart, and you put a good one in there, it's just like one of another many apples in the apple cart. It's just they're all bruised, and all right, so there's one good one in there. Does it really matter that much? But when the whole apple cart is full of really good apples, well, now it's like, wow, that's a really good apple cart there. And every single one of them kind of enhances the other. So I know that's kind of a crazy analogy, and I maybe didn't explain it to you really well, but I think you know what I'm talking about if you work in any type of teamwork environment, no matter what your job is. If the guys around you and the gals around you are all doing a good job, it's a lot easier for the young people who are involved to learn how to do it right and to raise their level of play to that level than it is if they're coming into a place that's really not doing so well, and it's like, okay, well, the linebackers are sloppy, they're not making plays, or the defensive ends aren't really making plays, and the corners aren't really making plays. Well, I'm trying to learn here, but what am I learning? Because it's all breaking down around me. I think the fact that the Giants dramatically enhanced this entire defense has really put Collins in a spot where he feels like, wow, look at this defense. Look how good this defense is going to be. Look at all these guys. These guys know what they're doing. These guys have won games before in this league. These guys have succeeded in this league before. I need to raise my level. And subconsciously, if not consciously, that helped him even more so in his second year, in addition to everything you just said.
Though I do think, to put things in perspective for him, I think it didn't necessarily hurt that he was on a defense that struggled, because, you know, you can learn from those mistakes and know, okay, this is what went wrong last season.
You can.
So even with enhanced players around you, as you just noted, hey, I know when we were in these circumstances last year, sometimes I tried to do too much because the trust wasn't there, or I wasn't too confident in the players around me. He doesn't necessarily have to have that mindset heading into this
season.
That's
a great word.
I think that
trust.
Did.
That's a
great
word.
Trust. I mean, when you're playing next to guys that you know are consistently going to make plays, Paul, you don't now have to go out of your area as a safety because you're confident they're going to be there.
And that may be the shortest way to say what I took 5 minutes to say. He trusts all those guys on defense around him who are his coworkers on the field, because now he knows, hey, they're going to make the right play. I don't need to worry about that. I'm just taking care of this. That's probably the best way to say it.
Stay within your zone. And the other thing that I'll add to that, I was listening to Landon Collins talk after the Bengals game, Paul, and he was describing his latest interception. And, you know, usually somebody within the media asks, take me through the play, what'd you see? And he explained, and this to me provided much more insight than you typically get from a player. He explained that, you know, he sees Tyler Eifert coming up the seam and Keenan Robinson with him, I believe, pretty much every step of the way. So Collins knew, okay, they're going to go to Eifert. Robinson's in perfect position to lead him to me.
Yes.
All I need to do is stay over the middle and be in place to get the ball. So that explanation seemed to indicate to me, see, he understands Robinson was in the right position, brought the guy to him, therefore he could stay within his zone.
And trusted that Robinson would complete the play on his side of the ledger so that I could make my part of the play work.
as opposed to, I'm not sure if Robinson's going to stick with him. I got to come up a little bit sooner.
There
the
you go.
The ball goes over my head.
We finally got
there
to the bottom of this.
Yes.
We're so glad that we did, and thanks for your patience.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Brandon, who called in earlier, we got hopefully a better
is
connection
he back?
Now. He is back. Brandon's in New York. Brandon, what's happening?
Hello.
All right, I'm back, fellas. So I just wanted to comment and say how genius Eli was on that 3rd and 6. I think it was definitely going to be a pass call. He watched the safety, and he switched that play.
Our understanding was it was a run that was changed to another run, just so you know.
Oh, is that what you think?
It was a run that was changed to a different run when he saw the formation. But understand this. The fourth down play that went to the Shepherd for the touchdown, that was all Eli and all Sterling Shepherd, because the Giants during the course of the week had seen a formation that they expected to come up on Sunday in the game. And so Eli told Shepherd when they came out of the huddle, if you get that formation, I'm throwing the ball to you. Forget about the play we've called. You're getting the ball, so be ready. And they get out there and they line up, and Shepherd recognized it, and Eli recognized it, and what do you know? He gets isolated against the linebacker. He gets that step on him like he knew he was going to get, and Eli threw the ball to him for a touchdown. That's credit to both Eli and Sterling Shepherd for having the heads-up recognition and also to the preparation of both players and coaches as well to be prepared for that situation.
To pick those things up on film. Two things that I wanted to add to what you just said, Paul. Shepherd also indicated he was not the first read on that play.
That's my
so
point.
So that's another good observation on the part of Eli. Hey, the hell with the play. We're going to take what the defense gives us, and I'm going to go to Shepherd. And the other thing that you noted, the other play, which Brandon on the line was talking about, the Jennings run, Jennings confirmed that he checked into another run. When he spoke to the media, Jennings confirmed that. So I think between what McAdoo indicated and Jennings, it's pretty clear there was a run play called. Manning then changed to another run play, and clearly it worked out because Jennings said he hesitated. He waited for the hole to open to his right, and then all of a sudden it parted like the Red Sea, and he took advantage.
And that's why every once in a while when Eli gets into a little bit of a slump, you shake it off and you say, boy, I'm glad Eli Manning's the Giants quarterback.
Those little nuances.
Yeah, well, I'm happy that play was actually a run. That was much smarter to start off with. But also, I love seeing Kennard there lined up on the defensive line on 3rd and 10. Again, that pass.
He likes it, too.
I love seeing that. And also, there's really no need to have our third tight end to be activated. You know, with some people banged up in the secondary, we should have someone else activated on the secondary or another offensive lineman that can also, you know, block as a tight end. My question to you is, who do you think is a better fourth safety, a free safety? Would you think Sensabaugh or do you think Hall?
Well, I think Hall probably has more safety skills, but right now that spot is supposed to be reserved for your dime corner.
Okay.
So,
and,
you know, but Sensabaugh is a better special teams player.
Which is why Leon Hall has been a healthy scratch, just like Trevin Wade got the edge over Hall the previous game.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying, let's say let's say one of these next two games we're up 21 in the fourth. You know, wouldn't it be nice to see what we can, what one of them have as a free safety?
Well, I mean, you know, you have.
First of all, you got to be up by 21 in the fourth.
I know. I'm not jumping to conclusions. Just saying.
Well, Brandon, I mean, I don't think that you necessarily have to force feed a player in that spot. I mean, it depends on whether or not the coaching staff feels that they even want to put those players in that position. Right now, you have Adams, you have Collins. You know, Burhey is back to full health, so he's been back in the mix. When Leon Hall's been active, they've utilized him as a safety. I mean, Sensabaugh, they've mainly been using as a corner because if you go back to his days with the Rams,
well, that's
pretty
what he
much
is.
What he's been utilized. That. So, I mean, listen, if they're in a comfortable lead and they want to maybe give him a rep or two, that's fine. But I don't think they're necessarily in a position right now where you just say, oh, well, we want to see what Sensabaugh could do as a safety, so we're just going to throw him back.
First things first, Landon Collins is not coming off the field. Okay, let's make that clear. He's the MVP of the first half of the season for the Giants. He's not coming off the field. Second thing is, Andrew Adams is a rookie. An undrafted free agent rookie playing the other safety. He wants every single snap he can get his hands on because he's trying to learn too. So it's really counterproductive to take either one of those guys off the field.
given that they're your regular safeties. Absolutely. Brandon.
All I was thinking is, you know, as a rookie, you know, like, you know, after a while, they're not used to so many games, so many snaps. But anyway, going on, do you think our third quarter, is our third quarterback allowed on the practice squad, or do they really think that he'll get picked up if they put him there?
You're talking about Josh Johnson?
Yeah.
I don't even know if Josh Johnson is eligible to be on the practice. I don't think he's eligible.
He's not.
He's had enough veteran experience.
That's what it is.
You can't put him on the practice squad at this point.
Gotcha. And last thing, I'm going to the next four games. So you're going to be hearing lots of loud chants from me and my crew. And also for Giants fans out there that think that, you know, that the games are too expensive for them or whatever, they can wait till game day, go on StubHub, go on Geek Seat, and you can get good seats at good prices. So I just want to...
All right,
shout
Brandon.
That out to
appreciate
all
the phone
time
call.
Fans. You guys have a great day.
All right, thanks so much.
Take care.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. Good afternoon. How you doing today?
Doing well, Jeff.
Hey.
How's things with you?
Good. That's good. Nice win the other night. It really feels good to be 6-3 at this point in time. Just a couple of things. Paul, I heard you mention something about Shane Vereen earlier at the top of the show, and that's why I wanted to call in today to find out when he might be eligible to come off the IR.
Well, I don't know when he's eligible. One thing I did want to add to what Paul had said, Ben McAdoo on his press conference last week, not his press conference, his conference call, Jeff, he didn't address it this week. He addressed it last week. Just to – I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but Ben McAdoo was asked about, is Vereen nearing returning to practice? And he said, right. I have been told no information. I have absolutely no update on his status. Now, I'm not saying that what Paul was alluding to is not going to come to fruition, but there is absolutely no indication right now that he is close to returning to practice or whatever it may be. So, I mean, to sit here and say he's definitely coming back in December, I think we're getting way ahead of ourselves at this point.
Yeah,
He would be eligible to come back in December because the rule is 6 weeks he's out, and
then
he can practice for 2 weeks.
Correct.
And then he's eligible 8 weeks in to be activated. So that would bring you to the last month of the season, okay?
Okay.
Now, again, we've seen Vereen occasionally walk around through the locker room, and when we've seen him, we've seen the from what originally was a sling that he had on because he had that surgery.
Right.
So initially we saw that he had one on, and then after a couple of weeks, that disappeared. And, you know, so, again, we've seen him walking around in the locker room. No one has actually interviewed him, to my knowledge. He's just, like, said hi and smiled and, hey, how you doing? I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
He seems optimistic. And from what I understand, he's running and keeping up with all his training.
Right.
So he expects that he's going to be activated. Now, again, only the doctors will tell you. But I think you have to assume that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice to get him back, you know, and see if he can perform at, you know, at a high level. Another thing, too, the offensive line seems to be getting kind of paper thin and doesn't seem to be too many options for replacements there. So you got to hope nobody else gets hurt. And
yeah, because I'm the next man up, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, that is dangerous.
Yeah, I'm kind of baffled why, you know, Beatty hasn't been activated, hasn't played at all. I mean, I know he's not going to be playing God, but still, I'm kind of wondering why no moves have been made, with him.
Well, we talked about this yesterday, Jeff. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with practice, you know, what the coaches are seeing and what type of progress he's making. I remember Mike Solari spoke a few weeks ago, the offensive line coach, and he was asked about Beatty. And, you know, he had mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing it because I don't have the transcript in front of me, but he indicated, you know, when Beatty joined the team, he went a long period of time without playing competitive football. So, you know, you don't just get that back overnight. And clearly they were confident with what they were seeing out of the other offensive linemen. So, I mean, I think it's a reflection of what they're seeing in practice more so than, you know, perhaps an injury or some other concern.
Okay. Just one other thing quickly. I always liked Dockor. I thought he was a pretty good player, pretty good running back for us, and always seemed to do a nice job whenever he was put in there. And I'm just wondering why he's not getting any touches anymore.
You know, I think as part of what they did during their self-scout and they tried to figure out which skill set is going to be working with the scheme they're using and also with some of the defensive looks they're facing. And right now it appears that they believe Paul Perkins is the guy best suited to try to help them move the sticks. Obviously, this past week, Jennings was the guy, especially as they tried to milk the clock at the end of the game. And I don't think anybody would be disappointed with the way Jennings produced in the fourth quarter. Now, having said all of that, I can only say from talking to Orleans Darkwood just last week, he said, look, we're all patient. We all understand that the coaches are just trying to find the best fit on a week-to-week basis, and that's the way it's working out. So he's being a team player, and apparently they've explained it to him, like, it's nothing personal. We're just trying to find the best game plan each and every Sunday, and that's the way it's worked out. But I agree with you, actually, in that I think Darkwood has something to offer. I think he is a legitimate NFL running back. And when he was in there earlier this year, he absolutely did something with his limited snaps.
Right. Okay, then let's get another win Sunday, and let's see if we can get up to 8-3. That'd be a nice thing. So you guys have a good day.
All right,
thank
you too, Jeff. Appreciate the phone call. This is from Ben McAdoo's conference call a week ago.
Yeah.
This was after the Giants beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Towards the end of the conference call, the question was, is Shane Vereen ready to practice? McAdoo's answer, quote, haven't had those conversations yet, end quote. And now we're a week past that, and we haven't seen the practice report yet, but I don't think there's been any indication that he's going to return to practice this week. So, like I said.
Getting closer, though.
Getting closer, but premature at
this
point.
To that time when that question needs to be addressed.
Because of the six-week allotment that you have to wait till you're
eligible.
Right,
he got hurt in week
practice.
Four.
I thought he got hurt in the Washington game.
Let me look.
Did he get hurt in week three?
Check.
I think he got hurt in week three, Paul. Got hurt in the Washington game because that was the game where he had the fumble.
All right,
and then we later found out that he played the majority of the contest with the tear. So I believe it was week three that he was injured. And then they put him on IR, if memory serves me correct, about 2 days after that Redskins game. So
he
about
played
September
in
27th.
The...
I don't think he played
Let's
in that
see, regular
game.
Season. Okay, no. All right, so it was
the
three games.
Yeah.
So, right, so it was after week three he got hurt.
And they put him on IR, I think, that Tuesday.
Okay.
So that would have been about September 27th.
Okay, so now we need to count those weeks out, and what do you come up with?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We just passed the seventh week.
Okay. So now we should. It's time to start asking that question
correct.
Again.
Yeah, and it's also time where he'd be eligible to also rejoin the 53-man roster.
And remember, that's an eligibility situation. They don't necessarily have to activate him or lose him because I know some people think, well, uh-oh, if you don't bring him back now because you thought he was going to come back, do you lose him? No, they don't. I mean, they can just leave him there if they want to.
Well, because they haven't designated anyone
correct.
To return. And you
correct.
Have the freedom and the flexibility. You can wait at the last second to designate someone.
And quite honestly, with as few games left in the season, it wouldn't pay to hold that designation any longer because what would you do with it? You know, we're already past the midpoint of the season. To designate someone to return at this point besides him would not make any sense.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Mark is in the city of the team that the Giants are playing this week, and that is Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to be wearing my Odell Beckham shirt this week, so rub it in a little bit. I think we have a great opportunity. Chicago's got some good players, so I think we have to be careful about them. But,
well, the linebackers are good, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the running back is really
Jordan
good.
Howard.
So,
if he's healthy,
yeah, he's great.
We've got to figure that out.
Zach Miller, their tight end, too, has done a lot of damage as well.
Yeah. So hopefully Jay Cutler comes up with a typical Cutler game in there. So,
well, he's certainly coming off a game like that, Mark, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They had a lot of turnovers in that game.
Yeah. So anyway, you guys actually talked about a couple things that I wanted to talk about, but I'll give you my spin on it. Paul, about a month or two ago, I called in and I asked if we had a Bill Parcells or a Bill Arnsberger in terms of a coach. And I was a little skeptical about your answers. But after the self-scout week, I think that Ben McAdoo has really won me over. I think we really have a winner. He did several things that I think really helped improve the team. One is he sat Larry Donnell, who I don't really realize why he's on the team. He instilled discipline. We got rid of the dumb penalties like we had in the Washington game. And I think he realized what our weaknesses were, especially on offense. You know, with Vereen going down, we don't have a fullback. We don't have great tight ends. And he's just become much more creative in putting the game plan together. Maybe this is really the offensive coordinator, too. But those routes that they ran for those three touchdowns were so creative. I mean, that Adams route going through the middle over to the flat and Beckham's, hook and go. I mean, those are just really creative plays that showed that they really scouted their opponents, looked at the capabilities of their players, and were able to, you know, take advantage of what they were doing. And I just think that we have a – I mean, they have Shepard going in fake reverses. They're running the bunch formation. I just think we're looking at a totally different offense that realizes you have to be much more creative to be successful.
Well, I think, you know, we've already addressed many of the small things that have been tweaked over the last couple of weeks. And it's you'd be very hard-pressed not to agree with what they've done because the results have certainly been very positive. Now, there are still a bunch more games to go. And how will the Giants continue to evolve as an offense, whether it's more of Eli under center, whether it's changing the tempo of what's going on with the offense, whether they continue to divvy up the snaps and the player deployment differently. Let's see if that continues. To this point, though, it looks like it's a good thing. So I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, the one thing is that we know we're not going to be a 150-yard rushing team.
No.
So you got to be creative.
That's not going to happen.
You know, you get your runs when you can get them and do this other creative stuff, and I think we'll go further. The other thing I wanted to bring up was Will Beatty, and part of the self-scout assessment was we want to use the entire 53. Well, I think he's the one guy or one of two guys that aren't really part of the 53, and the fact that they brought in Geddes off the practice squad as their next man up and left Beatty out there, you know, I can only view that signing as a mistake. We got a guy on there that wasn't ready to play. He's still not ready to play. And now that we've got a couple of guys hurt, we're really hurting on who the next man up
Time
is.
Out.
Let me just say one other thing.
All right, go ahead.
How many guys do we carry on the line? I think if we get two guys hurt, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, you have to understand now, when Justin Pugh goes down, okay, that means they're a guard short. Now Beatty is a tackle by trade. He's really not a guard. And Adam Geddes has played guard in this league for several years. He was with the Redskins before he came to the Giants. And he's a fighter and a scrapper. So you can't blame the Giants for saying, okay, we're going to wind up activating and using Adam Geddes in a game because that's what he does. He's a natural guard who, by the way, can also play some center in a pinch. Right. Now, Brett Jones goes out the other day. And so what happens? Well, Newhouse has played. In fact, I think he played one game earlier in his career at guard. I want to say it was with Cincinnati, maybe in 2013. Even though it's not something he's used to doing, he had already trained a little bit as a guard in his previous stops in the league. Again, Will Beatty is a tackle. So you can't blame him for that. And also, I will tell you, Newhouse had also been used in his previous NFL stops as a jumbo tight end.
Yes, he has.
He had played that before. Once again, Giants are trying to get that implemented into their offense. So if you like that, Newhouse is the guy to do it because he's done it before.
That
puts Beatty down on the depth chart again because you got guys ahead of him who have more experience at the spots they're using.
Beatty has been used in a jumbo package as a tight end previously, and the Giants have utilized him in those formations.
Not as much as Newhouse had done in the past, though, in his previous stops.
Well, and going back to your point, Mark, about, you know, using everybody on the 46, because remember, seven players are inactive, they are. I mean, they're just using Newhouse and Geddes ahead of Beatty. So, I mean, it's not as if they're not getting creative and they're saying, we're only going to use our five starting offensive linemen. It's just Beatty is not necessarily number six or seven at this point, based on what we see on the depth chart.
And you're clearly better putting Geddes in at guard than you are putting Beatty in the game.
In that position.
I mean, it wouldn't make sense to put Beatty ahead of him.
You don't just say, well, you know, well, Beatty, we want to see Beatty, so we're just going to throw him in a position that he's never played. Right. It's rough.
Right. The only other option would be to move Hart back to guard, but I don't think they really want to disrupt that because he's actually settling in over there.
I wouldn't do it either.
Well, you know, and it goes back to this, and I've heard a lot of people throw this out, Mark. When Justin Pugh went out, there were a lot of people that said move Bobby Hart to left guard,
Yes. Move
Newhouse to right tackle. But then what you're doing is
you're
impacting two spots. Why would you impact two spots when all I could do is impact one spot, I take Pugh out, I put Jones in, and I leave everybody where they are? Right. I think that's a smarter approach.
I think you're right, and it makes for a really great debate, so I appreciate that. But I will say one last thing about Newhouse. I think he played really well at guard, and, you know, once he settled in there between him and Geddes in the second half, you didn't hear Geno Atkins' name that much. So I think they did a great job. And
Geno Atkins played well. Let's not take anything away from him. He had a good game. I think he wore out at the end of the game because, you know, they were in constant rush mode. I do think that Newhouse held up, and please don't let me ignore that part of your comment. He held up. But don't think that he, quote, neutralized Geno Atkins. Atkins had a good
still
game.
Still made an impact.
He's a hell of a player.
All right. Well, on to Chicago. Let's go 8-3 and get into the real meat of the schedule and go Big Blue. Thanks, guys.
All right, Mark. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for
would you
in.
Want a position like that in Newhouse's spot? Basically, and this has nothing to do with him personally, Player X. Let's call him Player X. Player X, in those circumstances, all you want to do is get him out on the field and say, listen, do the best you can, fight, scrap, give us the best effort you possibly have within you, and try not to hurt us that much. Just try to tread water. Just tread water for us. Just don't get Eli killed. That's all you ask of a guy like that. And this has nothing to do with Newhouse. This is Player X I'm talking about in that spot. That's a very, very difficult spot for him to be put in.
Thrown into those circumstances. And remember, I've said this on multiple shows. After the game, he says that he barely had any reps. He barely worked next to Weston Richburg. Remember, he's playing right tackle. He's two spots over from Weston Richburg. So now you're playing next to a center who's giving signals,
yep,
signs, tapping you on the shoulder.
Very hard spot for
of
him
course.
To be put
and
into.
And then on top of that, Paul, let's not forget, he then goes in and out of the game and then is brought in as the tight end. So it wasn't like they just said, Marshall, focus on left guard.
No.
And that's it. No, we're then going to take you out. We're going to bring Geddes in. You're going to move to tight end. And you're going to be like, you know, so
and he held up.
Under those circumstances, I think you have to evaluate it there. Were there some breakdowns? Were there some issues? Absolutely. But throwing a guy like that into those circumstances and the fact that Eli Manning was only sacked once and they got the running game going late, you'll take that.
And
I don't
again,
think anybody should complain.
Playing Geno Atkins, okay? He wasn't looking across at John Schmelk. He was looking at Geno Atkins.
I don't know. Yeah, John against him, huh? Boy. I don't want to speculate. We may need an entire program to see how that blocking would go. Before we wrap up, I just want to get to a few tweets because there were a few people that didn't get an opportunity.
All right,
to
go ahead, real
phone.
Quick.
So, Adalberto Fernandez at BleedBlue180. We did bring this up earlier, but I'll rehash it. Question is Vereen practicing or is he still not healthy enough to practice? No indication that he is practicing at this point, but we went over he's at the point where he would be eligible to begin practicing in the return from the injury that he suffered in week 3. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben, we were talking about the red zone earlier in the show, about that's a reason why they're not scoring as many points, but he brings up, and this is true, they have improved over the last few games. He writes, I'm happy we've been able to throw touchdowns in the red zone the last few weeks. We're not settling for 3, and it's saving us. When you win a game by 1 point, the touchdown versus the field goal, it's a huge difference. And they were very efficient against the Cincinnati Bengals, whereas the Bengals, keep in mind.
Wait a minute. Did I just see Landon Collins for president?
Yes, you did see a tweet there. It's an image, I should say. Yes. Well, people are chiming in on the Landon Collins topic.
I got news for you. That's a job I don't think he wants.
No, I think he's more content with being the safety of the New York Giants. I think that's absolutely correct. And another point that Ben brought up in relation to the red zone, and I agree with this point, if Boyd doesn't drop that touchdown, well, I don't know necessarily if I agree with the latter part of the statement. He says we'd have no chance. Momentum is everything in football. The point that I would bring up is the fact that that, to me, was the difference in the game, Paul, because the Giants took advantage of all their red zone opportunities, whereas mm-hmm. the Bengals were 2-for-3. So in a 1-point game, it comes down to the fact that the Bengals did not execute on that one red zone trip, whereas the Giants did.
I'll tell
that,
you what,
to me, is what's important to me.
Remember 2 weeks ago when Andrew Adams got a fingernail on a post route that would have gone for a touchdown, but he got a fingernail on that route and prevented that score. That turned out to be a very big play in retrospect, didn't it?
Absolutely.
You know?
Huge, the little things like that.
And those are two guys, Trevin Wade and Andrew Adams, who, you know, you're not really thinking of on an everyday basis.
I'll even go back to, what about Jonathan Casillas' tackle all the way in week 1 on Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah.
On a 3rd and goal when the Cowboys were moving the football. I mean, he doesn't make that play. Who knows how that game turns out, too? It's those little things. Absolutely.
Let's go eat.
Yes, I think that's a good game plan. You can tell that Paul Dottino's
a little
hungry. With that being said, just a quick reminder, the MSG show tonight.
6 p.m. with myself and David Deal, press conference live, Coach McAdoo, and we'll, of course, dive into the Chicago Bears.
A little bit later on because they're practicing later today. We will continue to keep you updated here on Big Blue Kickoff Live the rest of the week at noon Eastern as we get you set for the matchup with the Chicago Bears. Appreciate all the calls. Appreciate all the tweets. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com.